This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Doe Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
The night sky for March 2013. Well, what about the stars to start with? That lovely region of sky with the constellations Orion, Taurus, Gemini and Auriga is now moving over towards the west as the sun sets. So they're gradually going to move out of view. If you come leftwards from Gemini towards Leo the Lion, with its bright star Regulus, it's a fairly blank part of the sky. You're crossing the constellation of Cancer. It actually contains a lovely open cluster, a wide one. It's called M44, the Beehive Cluster. A lovely thing to observe with binoculars. Below that, in fact, is one bright star, Procyon, the brightest star in Canis Minor. And then we have the sickle of Leo the Lion, with Regulus making sort of the four paws. It's like a lion on its haunches. It actually looks a bit like the real thing. The lions in Trafalgar Square, for example. There's quite a number of nice galaxies in Leo, just underneath the belly, really. And if you've got a dark night, 10 by 50 binoculars or a small telescope, if you just sweep westwards from Regulus, you may well pick them up. There's a group of three, M105, M96 and M95, then further over, M66 and M65. Between the tail of Leo, I think it's Denebola, and towards a bright star you'll see rising over in the east, which is Arcturus in Bootes, there's a fairly faint part of the heavens, the northern part of the constellation of Virgo and the constellation of Coma Berenices. It's a fairly faint part of the sky, but in fact it's called the realm of the galaxies, because in that direction we're looking towards the centre of a giant cluster called the Virgo Cluster. And there are quite a number of Messier galaxies in that particular region. Again, very dark night, good binoculars or a small telescope will pick many of them up. If you look upwards above Leo, you'll actually come to Ursa Major, the Great Bear, with, of course, the plough, called the Big Dipper by the Americans, which actually relates to the ladle used by the farmer's wife to ladle out the soup at lunchtime for the farmhands, but we call it the plough. Again, with binoculars, have a look at the middle star of the three making up the handle, Alcor and Mizar. Mizar is quite bright, Alcor is less bright. Even with your eyes, you may see it's a double system. But if you look with a small telescope, you'll see that Mizar is itself a double star, and there's a fourth, rather pretty little reddish star in the field of view of a small telescope. Nice thing to look at. Well, what about the planets this month? Well, Jupiter, we've been talking about quite a bit in the last couple of months. It's in the constellation of Taurus. It's actually now moving somewhat westwards. It starts about 5 degrees to the upper right of Aldebaran, which is the star, the Eye of the Bull, in front of the Hyades cluster, although not part of it. It's moving over to the east, so by the end of the month it's actually above Aldebaran. It's about 5 degrees away. Now, because it's now moving away from the Earth, the angular diameter is actually reducing from about 39 to 36 arc seconds during the month. But that's still quite big enough to show lots of detail with a small telescope. You've got bright zones and darker bands crossing the disk, and up to 4 Galilean moons visible as they weave their way around the giant planet. Well, as Jupiter wanes from our view, perhaps, so Saturn gets better, although sadly it's relatively low in the ecliptic, so it never actually rises that high in the sky, up to about an elevation of 25 degrees. At the beginning of March, it rises at 11:30, and so transits, that's due south, before dawn, at about 04:30 UT. By month's end, it's actually rising sooner, of course, by about 21:40, and transit about 0200 UT. So towards the end of March, we will have a chance of looking at it in detail late in the evening. As, of course, it's getting nearer to us, or should I say we're getting nearer to it, because it doesn't move very quickly in the sky. Its magnitude is increasing from plus 0.4 to plus 0.3 magnitudes. Lower plus numbers mean brighter. The angular size, conversely, is increasing from about 18 to 18.6 arc seconds. And the good news is, as I've said before, is that the rings are now opening out. They have been out to about 19 degrees to the line of sight, although in fact this month they actually fractionally drop to about 18.6 arc seconds. We're observing much of the planet's southern hemisphere with the northern hemisphere, quite a bit of it hidden by the ring system. If you've got a small scope, you have a chance of spotting Cassini's division that lies between the A and the B rings. Mercury. Well, it reaches what is called greatest western elongation, and that's when it's furthest from the southern angle towards the west, on the 31st. And that implies we see it before dawn. However, this is not what is called a good apparition, as the ecliptic at dawn this time of year makes a very shallow angle to the horizon. So as a result, Mercury will be very low above the horizon in the east-southeast as dawn breaks. The elevation never gets that high. You'll almost certainly need binoculars to see it, but please do not use them after the sun has risen. You must take very great care of your eyes. Now Mars, it's been hanging around low in the west for months now. As it's been moving eastwards, it sort of continues to stay. It's in Aquarius. It could be seen at an elevation of just 3 degrees in the southwest, about 45 minutes after sunset at the beginning of March. But I think, to be honest, by the end of the month, it really will be lost in the sun's glare. Again, you'll need to have binoculars to spot it. Don't use them until the sun has set. Now, there's an interesting thing that happens on the 22nd of March, but it's perhaps unlikely we'll have a chance to see it. Given an exceedingly low western horizon, you might just possibly spot Mars, have a magnitude of 1.2, but it's going to be within 39 arc seconds of the planet Uranus. Now, sadly, that will just be at magnitude 6, so it will almost certainly not be visible. However, I have a feeling that if you get a reasonably high power, a telescope which actually makes the background skylight reduce in brightness, you might just have a chance of picking it up. But of course, the sky is going to be very good, and it's obviously got to be where you can see almost down to a sea horizon. Well, finally, Venus. Well, we haven't seen it for a little bit. It reaches superior conjunction on March the 28th. And that's on the far side of the sun, so will not be visible at all this month. Well, what about some highlights? We don't actually have very many, but one of them could be quite good. Between about March the 9th and the 20th, just after sunset, we have a chance to spot what may have been the brightest comet we've seen for some time. It's called Comet Pan-STARRS. It was discovered some 2 years ago when it lay between the orbits of Saturn and Jupiter, having a brightness of just 19th magnitude. And the name comes from the telescope that observed it. It's called the Panoramic Survey Telescope and Rapid Response System, PAN-STARRS for short. Now, it reaches what is called perihelion when it's closest to the Sun on March the 10th, and will be just 0.3 AU away from the Sun within the orbit of Mercury. At our northern latitudes in the UK, it's likely to be at its best between about March the 8th to 20th, with the 12th to 17th probably optimum. Again, you've got to get yourself to a point where you have a very good low west and northwestern horizon. The azimuth at which you'll see it is gradually moving northwards. It starts at about azimuth 260, just south of west on the 9th, 270 due west on the 13th, 280 on the 18th, and azimuth 310 on the 28th. If it's clear, there'll be a wonderful imaging opportunity on the 12th, when it should lie just above a thin crescent moon. Let's hope it's a clear night for that. In fact, there's going to be another great imaging opportunity next month on April the 4th, when, with a similar magnitude, it passes very close to M31, the Andromeda galaxy. And that again could make a lovely photograph. I'm quite sure someone will take it. We'll see them in the magazines before too long. Just before I finish, I sometimes mention a book that I think it might be worth you buying. And in the past, I've talked about the book called Turn Left at Orion, which is a lovely description of many of the beautiful objects you can see with binoculars or a small telescope. I've just got, at a ridiculously low price from Amazon, the Philips Night Sky Atlas, in fact, written by a friend of mine called Robin Skaggle, which is not why I'm recommending it, but it has several very good features. First of all, it has a very nice four-quadrant lunar map, a great help for finding your way around the moon. And then it has a set of star charts produced by Will Tyrian. He's the top celestial cartographer at the present time. And opposite each of these star charts is a sort of a photorealistic image of what the sky might look like to your eyes. I think that's a very, very nice feature. There are a lot of hints and tips about observing the moon, planets and the stars. And then there's a series of constellation sections, a little map of each constellation, and pictures of some of the interesting objects within it. It cost me all of £9.99, and it's a very worthwhile buy. Well, best of luck, and I do hope you have a chance to see comet Pan-STARRS.
Thanks for that, Ian. Now John Field tells us what you can see in the southern night sky.
Kia ora, and welcome to the March night sky from Carter Observatory. March sees our night skies quickly becoming longer, and this means the opportunity for more observing. Early in March, two bright comets should be visible in the southwest after sunset. Comets Lemon F6 and Pan-STARRS L4 may be bright enough to be seen with the unaided eye, but should be easily found in binoculars. In the northeast, our summer constellations of Taurus, Orion and Gemini can be found. They are moving towards the western horizon a little more each night. Low in the northwest are the Pleiades. This pretty cluster of stars is known to many cultures and has a plethora of names. To Māori, they are Matariki, the little eyes, and are important in the Māori annual calendar. Binoculars and small telescopes will reveal many more stars in this cluster. Following the Pleiades is the V-shaped head of Taurus. Sitting between the two is Jupiter, the largest planet in our solar system. Jupiter is moving further away from the Earth and now appears fainter in our sky compared to last December when it was at opposition. The brightest star in the V of Taurus is called Aldebaran, coming from the Arabic for the follower, and marks one of the bull's eyes. This orange star is the 13th brightest star in our night sky, shining at a magnitude of 0.87. The orange hue of Aldebaran means that the star has a cooler surface temperature than our star, the Sun. It is a red giant star in the final stages of its stellar evolution. The fainter stars of the V of the bull's head are formed by the more distant Hyades star cluster. In Greek mythology, they are the half-sisters of the Pleiades. This cluster is estimated to be about 150 light-years away and contains over 100 stars that are brighter than 9th magnitude. This cluster includes a number of double or multiple stars. Almost due north in the evening sky is the zodiac constellation of Cancer the Crab, which appears as four stars with a haze at the center. Using binoculars, this haze is revealed as a cluster of stars known as the Beehive Cluster. Although this cluster is about 500 to 600 light-years away, it covers an area of the sky about three times the size of the full moon as viewed in our sky. Following the crab across the sky and rising at sunset is the large constellation of Leo the Lion. Leo is one of the 12 zodiac constellations, and this constellation dates back to the time of the Persians. It later became associated with the legend of Hercules, and the killing of this lion was the first of its 12 tasks. The brightest star in Leo, Regulus, shines at magnitude 1.4, and is the 22nd brightest star in the night sky. Regulus is a blue-white star and has a magnitude 7.6 red companion that is visible in binoculars or small telescopes. Rising up in the eastern sky before midnight is Saturn, sitting in the constellation of Libra. The Milky Way runs from north to south in our evening sky and is at its brightest near to our southern horizon. To many cultures, the Milky Way is seen as a path or a river across the night sky. To Māori and Aotearoa is Te Ikaroa, the long fish, and it's along this path that Tomariri sailed across the sky as he placed the stars into the heavens. The mottled appearance of the Milky Way comes from the dark clouds of interstellar material that blocks the light from the more distant stars. Sitting in the southern part of the Milky Way is Crux, commonly called the Southern Cross, and nearby are the pointer stars. Between Crux and Canis Major sits the broken up remains of the great ship Argo. Until 1752, it was the largest constellation, but was broken up into three parts: Carina the Keel, Vela the Sails, and Pupus the Poop Deck. Carina has a great number of objects to spot with the unaided eye. The brightest star in Carina is Canopus, the second brightest star in our night sky, shining at magnitude -0.72. The current distance estimate is 310 light-years. This makes Canopus the brightest star within 700 light-years of our solar system. The great ship Argo was associated with the legend of Jason the Argonauts. The ship carried the crew on their quest to find the Golden Fleece. The ship rides along the Milky Way with its hull, careening at the keel, pointing towards the South Celestial Pole. This is the point that is overhead at Earth's southern pole. It is around this point that all the stars in our southern sky rotate. The clouds of Magellan are high in the southern sky near to Echina and can be easily seen with unaided eye on a dark, moonless night. These are two small galaxies about 160 and 200,000 light-years away. March the 20th marks the autumnal equinox here in the southern hemisphere. This marks the time halfway between our summer and winter solstices. The sun rises due east and sets due west, and our day and night hours are similar in length. From this time and until the time of the winter solstice, our nighttime hours will continue to grow longer as our daytime hours shorten. Sitting in the morning twilight is Mercury, making its best appearance for the year. By the middle of the month, it will rise due east at dawn, looking like a moderately bright orange star. Through a telescope, it will look like a tiny crescent moon. Venus and Mars are sitting on the far side of the sun and are invisible to us. We wish all our listeners a happy equinox and hope the skies remain clear for you all.